This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, sourcing, selecting, and blending teas since 1966. 800-999-2132 or on the web at peets.com.
Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, July 26, 2006. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Angela Hancock-Revis.
Coming up on this morning's newscast, the California heat wave responsible for at least 56 deaths is going to continue for an 11th straight day. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan says an Israeli airstrike on a UN outpost was deliberate. And Mexican presidential candidate López Obrador has filed a criminal complaint against the Federal Electoral Institute. Portland area weather calls for partly cloudy with highs in the low 80s.
In Medford, nurses Suzanne Qualls and Jean Mackey bridged the gap between anxious patients and their doctors when the office doors closed and the golf course is wide open. Qualls figured she could help both patients and doctors when she founded Nurse on Call in 2003. Nurse on Call provides after-hours, weekend, and holiday telephone triage for nearly 30 local doctors, handling everything from diaper rash to suicidal callers. Similar services are usually provided by large banks of nurses in metropolitan areas. This from the Medford Mail Tribune.
Gasoline refined in the Pacific Northwest contains the nation's highest levels of benzene, a pollutant linked to leukemia. The Eugene Registered Guard reports that new federal rules would cut the level nationally, but would still leave Northwest gasoline with more benzene than in any other parts of the country. Marilyn Hugh, director of the Lane Regional Air Protection Agency, said there's a clear connection between benzene exposure and cancer. He said studies show that benzene in the air mainly comes from vehicle exhaust. Benzene levels in the exhaust fumes are related to benzene levels in gasoline, and that benzene level in the air relate to cancer in humans. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency proposed a benzene reduction rule in February. The plan was to cut the average of benzene content in gasoline nationally from 0.97% to 0.62% by volume. The new rules would go into effect in 2011. But in the Northwest, where the air was relatively clean, the EPA did not force refineries to upgrade. Northwest air officials asked EPA for tougher regulations that would get Northwest refineries closer to the national standard.
In Oregon, more employers are stepping up efforts to verify workers' legal status. They're doing so with the help of the Federal Basic Pilot Program, which lets employers verify documents supplied by job applicants. When the Oregon Department of Forestry wrote its 2006 contracts, it required private fire crew contractors to verify an applicant's eligibility to work in the U.S. It was the first time the agency made such a demand. Similarly, Salem-based Don Pancho Authentic Mexican Foods requires employment agencies with whom it contracts to verify an employee's work eligibility through the program. Since September, about 2,000 new employers nationwide have signed up for with the voluntary program. That brings the number of businesses participating to more than 10,000, according to the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. The program involves checking the Social Security Administration and the Department of Homeland Security online databases to confirm an employee's eligibility to work in the U.S. The search measures that information against more than 425 million records in the SSA database. It also compares it with more than 60 million records in Homeland Security database. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
And also from the Salem Statesman Journal, a Zogby poll shows support is split evenly between Democrat incumbent Ted Kulongoski and Republican challenger Ron Saxton, with a small share going to independent hopeful Ben Westland. Westland is the state senator from Bend area who left the Republican Party to make a bid for governor on his own. He still has to submit enough valid petition signatures to qualify for the ballot. If Westland fails to qualify, the Zogby poll shows voters leaning toward Kulongoski. But the poll's methods are controversial, and some pollsters dispute the findings.
A strange and rare discovery near Seaside is puzzling marine scientists. A nearly 6-foot-long king of the salmon washed up on the beach. The fish is a member of the ribbonfish family. Ribbonfish are normally found around 1,600 feet below the surface of the ocean, from Alaska to Baja and along the coast of Chile. They can grow up to 6 feet. Keith Chandler of the Seaside Aquarium says it's the first time he's seen one washed up on an Oregon beach in his 27-year marine science career. He says he's not sure what kind of conditions could have brought the creature up this far above its normal environment. Tiffany Booth of the Seaside Aquarium said ribbonfish are also known as king of the salmon. The name comes from an Indian legend which describes the fish as the king who leads salmon back to the rivers to spawn. They're rarely seen, but fishermen have been known to catch them both in nets and on line.
And the high-pressure system over California that has brought 100-degree weather to the state will be hanging around, making it the 11th straight day of sweltering heat and increasing the potential of more deaths and another strain on utilities. The National Weather Service predicted temperatures around the state to fall several degrees, but temperatures will still be over 100 in many parts. The gradual cooling trend is expected to continue throughout the week. State and local authorities reported at least 56 possible heat-related deaths since the heat wave started, most in the Central Valley and deserts east of Los Angeles. The state's power consumption peaked Tuesday afternoon at 49,762 megawatts, shy of the record 50,270 megawatts set Monday. The total number of California residents who have lost electricity at some point during the heat wave topped 1.5 million people. But California wasn't the only state dealing with the strain of the heat. The St. Louis area was expected to have electricity restored today to all customers, thousands of whom have been without power for a week. And two massive storms last weekend knocked out power to nearly 600,000 homes and businesses. The violent weather and resulting blackouts were blamed for 5 deaths. And in Queens, borough of New York City, a blackout that left about 100,000 people without electricity for 9 days during some of the hottest days of the year ended early today.
And the record-setting California heat wave blamed for the deaths of at least 56 people has also killed thousands of dairy cows and other livestock. Several California counties have been forced to declare a state of emergency, allowing the dumping of dead livestock in landfills, something usually outlawed because of the health risks. Temperatures in Fresno County reached 113 degrees in recent days. Industry experts say individual dairy farmers could lose about 2% of their herd this year due to heat.
In Washington State, dozens of trout, turtles, and more than 70 birds have died in the murky waters of Lake Wapato since last summer. But with some financial help from the legislature, the city is moving to clear up the problem. The Parks Department and the city of Tacoma have agreed to share the cost of a $50,000 water quality study as a first step toward revitalizing the 30-acre lake. Wildlife losses first alarmed officials last summer when workers found dozens of dead fish and more than 70 dead birds. At least 2 birds examined by avian health authorities might have been poisoned by botulism, a toxin that causes paralysis and disturbances in the breathing and vision. Experts have found no single cause, but Metro's parks official admit the lake fails to provide a healthy habitat for wildlife. They hope Tetra Tech consultant Harry Gibbons will suggest an affordable solution. Park managers have asked him to prepare a preliminary report by the end of this year. The goal is to prepare for next winter's legislative session. This from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
Health experts and labor unions say that emergency and safety standards are needed to counter a widening outbreak of lung disease among workers exposed to a common ingredient in microwave popcorn. This from the LA Times. The Teamsters and United Food and Commercial Workers plan to file an emergency petition today demanding that the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration set exposure limits for diacetyl, a flavoring agent used in the manufacture of artificial popcorn butter, dog food, and other products. Diacetyl has been linked to an irreversible lung disease that has afflicted scores of workers at popcorn factories and other work sites and killed at least 3 people in the last few years. The unions say that the Bush administration has not acted quickly enough to stop exposure, resulting in increased health risks for thousands of workers in the multi-billion-dollar flavoring industry. OSHA officials declined to comment on the petition, but in the past, the agency has indicated that workplace protections are sufficient. The agency has no limits for worker exposure to diacetyl. The problem was initially believed confined to popcorn plants, where workers dumped out bags of diacetyl powder. But this spring, California health experts reported that two workers at plants that made flavorings for dog food and other products had also become ill. A third case is being investigated. Dr. Philip Harbour, chief of the Division of Occupational and Environmental Medicine at UCLA's medical school, said the lung capacity in the two patients was normal. The cases, he said, were a warning sign that workers in other flavoring-related industries who have been exposed to diacetyl may suffer from the lung disease.
A diplomatically worded research report and an undiplomatic dose of international humiliation have finally forced Victoria, British Columbia to take action on sewage treatment. British Columbia's environment minister ended 3 decades of a bureaucratic delay with a 5-paragraph order. It set down a schedule to end once and for all the dumping of untreated human and toxic waste into the Straits of Juan de Fuca. The Capital Regional District was told that it must submit for approval no later than 2007, a plan detailing a fixed schedule for the provisions of sewage treatment. The province's tourist capital dumps a volume of effluent into the strait that would fill 40,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools each year. This from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
Abortion bill aimed at stopping people from helping pregnant girls skirt parental notification laws has gained passage in both houses of Congress. Just moments after the Senate passed its version 65-34 late yesterday, with the support of 14 Democrats, Illinois Democrat Senator Dick Durbin used a procedural notion to halt its progress. There are significant differences between the Senate bill and the House version passed last year. Both bills are designed to make it a crime to help a pregnant girl across state lines to get an abortion in an effort to evade parental notification and consent laws in her home state. The Senate bill would protect the girl and her parents from prosecution, as well as provide an exception for anyone who helps a girl end her pregnancy when the pregnancy poses a threat to the mother's life. It also contains a way for girls with abusive parents to ask a court to allow the abortion without her parents' notification. But unlike the Senate bill, the House measure sets out a national parental notification law. It would require a physician who knowingly performs or induces an abortion on a minor who is resident of another state to provide notice of at least 24 hours to a parent of the minor before the procedure. 6 states, Connecticut, Hawaii, New York, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington, as well as the District of Columbia, have no parental consent or notification laws. Legal challenges have blocked such laws in 9 states, Alaska, California, Idaho, Illinois, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, and New Mexico.
Missouri's revised plan for conducting lethal injections still falls short of ensuring they are conducted humanely, according to a judge who halted executions. U.S. District Judge Fernando Gayton Jr. cited numerous problems when he stopped executions June 26th. Among them, the state needed a board-certified anesthesiologist to ensure the lethal injection procedure used posed no risk of unnecessary pain and suffering. The state was unable to find an anesthesiologist willing to participate and wanted to use another physician, a nurse, or a pharmacist to prepare the drugs used to put inmates to death. The legal challenge to the state's death penalty was brought on behalf of Michael A. Taylor, whose attorneys argue the drug combination used to execute Missouri prisoners is unconstitutionally cruel punishment. Taylor's appeal will now go before the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals.
A federal judge threw out a lawsuit aimed at blocking AT&T from giving telephone records to the government for use in the so-called War on Terror, claiming it would harm national security. U.S. District Judge Matthew F. Kennelly said, the court is persuaded that requiring AT&T to confirm or deny whether it has disclosed large quantities of telephone records to the federal government could give adversaries of this country valuable insight into the government intelligence activities. The lawsuit was filed by the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois on behalf of author Studs Terkel and other activists who said their constitutional rights were violated because of a National Security Agency program of gathering phone company records. Justice Department attorneys had argued it would violate the law against divulging state secrets for AT&T to say whether it had provided telephone records to the super-secret spy agency. The UCLA argued that the practice was no longer secret because numerous news reports had made it clear that phone records had been given to the agency.
About 50 Israeli tanks moved back into northern Gaza early today, and five Palestinians were killed in airstrikes as Israel pressed ahead with its nearly month-long attack on Gaza. Israeli aircraft carried out at least three airstrikes as the troops moved in, killing five people and wounding 15. Two of the five deaths were militants, but the other three were not immediately identified. A number of Israeli tanks and bulldozers also crossed into southern Gaza near Khan Yunis yesterday. Just before the force entered, an Israeli helicopter dropped leaflets warning residents to stay indoors because the army was carrying out an operation. Also yesterday, a Palestinian boy was killed and his father and sister wounded near Khan Yunis. An Israeli gunfire was blamed, but Israel denies any responsibility. And early today, Israeli troops took over the rooftops of several houses in northern Gaza, and Israeli aircraft blasted several houses of Hamas and Islamic Jihad activists after warning people to leave. And meanwhile, in the West Bank, about 20 Israeli jeeps entered the city of Ramallah on Tuesday night and surrounded a building there.
UN Secretary General Kofi Annan has accused Israel of deliberately bombing a UN outpost in southern Lebanon late yesterday, killing four UN observers, this from the Jerusalem Post. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said the UN peacekeepers were killed mistakenly yesterday by the Israeli Air Force and expressed dismay over Annan's accusation and promised a thorough investigation in the results given to Annan. Annan said Israel appeared to have struck the site deliberately. The Israeli bomb made a direct hit on the building and shelter of the observer post in the town of Kiam near eastern end of the border with Israel. Milo Struger, the spokesperson for UN peacekeeping force in Lebanon, known as UNIFIL, said that the Israeli firing continued even during the rescue operation. The victims included observers from Austria, Canada, China, and Finland. Annan said in his statement that the post had been there for a long time and was marked clearly, and was hit despite assurances from Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert that the UN position would not be attacked.
And China has condemned the Israeli attack on the UN observation post in southern Lebanon, which killed four United Nations observers, including a Chinese national, this from the BBC. China's foreign ministry spokesman said that Israel's ambassador to Beijing was summoned and authorities asked for an investigation and an apology. He also called for an immediate ceasefire to the two-week conflict in the region in his statement, which was carried on the ministry's website. Chinese national Du Zhanyao was killed when an Israeli bomb hit the UN observation post. Three other UN observers from Austria, Canada, and Finland were also killed.
King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia has promised to give $500 million to Lebanon to pay for reconstruction. He also approved $1 billion for the Central Bank of Lebanon to support the economy. The Saudi monarch warned that Israel's military offensive in Lebanon and Gaza could ignite a war in the region. He has held tasks with Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak in the Saudi capital, Riyadh, ahead of conference on Lebanon in Rome today. Saudi Arabia has been a major backer of Lebanon since the 1975-1990 civil war was ended with a peace deal in the Saudi town of Taif. The Saudi government is also giving $250 million to the Palestinians who are also suffering the effects of the Israeli war machine. This from the BBC.
And Tropical Storm Kame weakened to a tropical depression today, but killed at least eight people and left 18 others missing as it battered China's southeast and forced the evacuation of more than 640,000 residents. Chinese Central Television said five of the deaths and all of those missing were in Jiangxi Province, just inland from Fujian Province, where Kame made landfall as a typhoon yesterday. Three other deaths were in neighboring Guangdong province. Kaimai, which has brought strong wind and rain to the northern Philippines and Taiwan, continued to inundate a wide slice of southern China after weakening to a depression. Forecasters expected heavy rains through Thursday. In the Philippines, two people were reported missing and more than 27,000 were evacuated due to floods near Manila. And Kaimai, the Korean word for ant, is this season's seventh typhoon. It comes on the heels of tropical storms Bilis, which pounded southern China more than a week ago, triggering flooding and mudslides and killing more than 600 people.
Mission, 22 American experts examined three military training grounds and completed a survey of potential sites in the Czech Republic for a U.S. strategic defense base. The U.S. is considering building its first anti-missile base in Europe on the territory of either the Czech Republic, Hungary, or Poland. The Americans told the Czech authorities that there are three sites inspected and were suitable for a future base. It is a controversial issue in the Czech Republic, according to a recent opinion poll, which finds that a majority of Czechs oppose the plan for such a base. The defense ministry official said the U.S. experts' mission followed 2 years of talks between the two countries and was part of the security strategy adopted by the Czech government in 2004. U.S. experts have already been in Poland and are expected to go on a similar fact-finding visit to Hungary. This from the BBC.
Mexican presidential candidate Andres Manuel López Obrador has filed a criminal complaint against the Federal Electoral Institute over the disputed July 2nd presidential vote. This is from the BBC. Obrador has accused the electoral authorities of letting business firms fund TV ads against him. He has already filed a legal challenge demanding a recount of the vote in which conservative Felipe Calderón won by a half percentage point. The dispute has paralyzed Mexican politics. The case filed by López Obrador yesterday argues that the nine members of the Electoral Institute failed to stop private companies from funding ads which broke electoral regulations. And in a separate case, López Obrador will hear by the end of August whether a manual recount of votes will take place. He says there's evidence that votes counted were rigged at about half of the country's polling stations. Calderón has rejected calls for a recount of the 41 million ballots cast, describing the election as clean, free, and democratic.
Bolivian President Evo Morales has called for a change within the country's Catholic Church. He is accusing it of acting as in the times of the Inquisition. Morales said the Catholic leaders should understand the need for freedom of religion and belief. His government recently announced plans to teach a range of religions in schools as well as native traditions. Church leaders have opposed the planned changes, calling on Catholics to defend their faith. Morales spoke out after Catholic leaders criticized the planned reforms, which would break the longstanding dominance of Catholicism in Bolivian schools. The Archbishop of Santa Cruz, Cardinal Julio Terrazas, said on Sunday that Catholics were being passive in the face of Morales's planned changes. This from the BBC.
And also from the BBC, a protest over a controversial law over mine ownership in Honduras has closed parts of the Pan American Highway. Hundreds of Catholic priests, agricultural workers, environmentalists, and students took part in the protest in western Honduras. The protest was over a 1998 law, which allowed foreigners to own as much as 34% of Honduran mines. Yesterday's protest closed four parts of the highway, the country's major arterial route. The protest was organized by the Civic and Democratic Alliance, a body representing more than 15 environmental groups. Honduran President Manuel Zelaya said the protests were giving the country a bad image, but others see it as an inspiration to disenfranchise and oppress people worldwide.
A UNICEF report found that more than 600 children die every day in a war-ravaged Congo, and even more are displaced, sexually abused, or swept into the camps of combatant groups. The report comes less than a week before the country's first democratic elections in more than 40 years. The children are victimized by instability lingering from the wars of 1996 to 2002, when neighboring Rwanda's genocide spilled over its borders and a regional battle began largely over control of Congo's vast mineral resources, drawing in Burundi, Rwanda, Uganda, Zimbabwe, Namibia, and Angola. Soldiers and rebels continue to terrorize eastern Congo, forcing some 360,000 people from their homes this year, despite the presence of some 17,500 UN peacekeepers. UNICEF estimates there are hundreds of thousands of victims of combatants using sexual violence as a weapon of war. Very young girls are singled out for sexual crimes, according to the report, because of the mistaken belief that sex with them will cure HIV and AIDS. An estimated 1.1 million people live with the disease in the Congo, a number UNICEF says will climb as war, gang rape, and community displacement continue to rack the country. The report also states that more children under the age of 5 die every year in Congo, population about 62 million, than in either China, a country with 23 times the population, or all of Latin America.
International donors have pledged $750 million in aid to Haiti in an effort to help economic recovery over the next year. The decision came after a one-day donors meeting in the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince. The meeting included delegates from the World Bank, the European Union, and Inter-American Development Bank. It is much more than the $540 million the Haitian government had asked for to stabilize the economy. The money is part of an overall plea for $7 billion to help pay for security, road building, health services, and agricultural improvements in the promotion of institutional reform. The government of René Préval also wants to upgrade the electricity grid and telecommunications and help promote tourism.
Islamic courts controlling the Somali capital will not take part in talks with the government unless Ethiopian troops leave Somalia, an official says. Earlier, Somalia's interim government agreed unconditionally to hold peace talks with the Islamists. Talks to try and avert conflict between the two sides broke down last week. The Union of Islamic Courts has vowed to expel Ethiopian troops who are deployed in Baidoa to assist the weak transitional Somali government. On Monday, thousands of Somalis staged a rally in Mogadishu, calling on Ethiopian troops to leave. The demonstrators burnt Ethiopian flags at a protest in the capital, according to the BBC. As well as Baidoa, Ethiopian troops have also been seen in another central town, Wajid. Ethiopia and the transitional government have refused to confirm Ethiopian troops are on Somali soil.
Farmers in Burkina Faso not so long ago were able to make a comfortable living by growing cotton. The Burkinabe people used to call it white gold. But earning the money is getting harder as cotton prices continue to fall. Cotton farmers see only one reason for lower cotton prices, namely American subsidies to its own cotton farmers. These have led to oversupply on the world market, and this extra supply is depressing prices. Farmers in Burkina Faso have long wanted the issue of U.S. cotton subsidies to be higher on the agenda of global trade talks. With the trade talks in ruins, there is growing concern that anger at subsidies among African farmers could translate into protectionism in some African countries. Cotton growers feel that there is no chance that subsidies to Western farmers will evaporate. In neighboring Ghana, a campaign to encourage people to eat local rice has been a success. And some farmers' groups are lobbying for higher tariffs on imports and incentives to buy locally made textiles. This is from the BBC.
This has been the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, July 26th, 2006. Today's editor is Brian Smith with help from Chris Andre. Our engineer is Boone Revis. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director, and I'm Angela Hancock-Revis.
And I'm Brian Smith.
We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge on translator K246AA, and 100.7 in the Willamette Valley on translator K220HR. If you would like to volunteer in the AM newsroom, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202. or email at amnews@kbu.org. Portland area weather, cloudy in the morning, clearing later. Highs in the 80s. Tonight, mostly clear, lows around 60. Coming up this morning on KBU.